Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Today, we are joined by our guest, Alex DePaul Lee. Alex DePaul Lee Sr. is a native of Beaumont, Texas, and is a graduate of Beaumont Central Medical Magnet High School. In college, he was pursuing a degree in musical education and history at Texas Southern University in Houston, Texas. During summer break, he took a trip to Eunice, Louisiana, and there he met with a great aunt and saw a photo of his great grandfather for the first time and began researching his family history. During his research, he has preserved thousands of family photos, documents, and conducted numerous interviews. He's connected with thousands of relatives through social media, and his mission is to preserve and archive as much history as possible. Alex has done several news interviews, written articles for several magazines, gone viral on social media, and given genealogy presentations at private family gatherings, state parks, and universities. His research continues to expand daily, and he's looking forward to meeting as many people as he can, especially those who share his passion for genealogy and history. Welcome to Speak On It, Alex.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So we're going to go ahead and get started. And first, we are very, very impressed with the work that you have done, which caught our attention through your social media posts on Facebook and Twitter. On Twitter, there is a tweet noting that it started with a picture. Please share with our listeners the significance of the photo and how you began your genealogy journey.
When I say it started with a picture, the picture you're referring to is a picture of my great-grandfather, Eric LaFleur, who was a native of Grand Prairie, Louisiana. I never knew anything about my family beyond my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, that is. And when I looked at that picture, at first, I had no idea who that person was, but based on the fact that it was hanging on the wall next to a picture of Jesus, I'm sure whoever that person was important. Although he did not look like a president or anything like that, I recognized, I was wondering why did my great aunt have a picture of, you know, a white man hanging on her wall. And when I asked her about that picture, that's when she told me that there was actually a picture of her father, who I was named after. And after she told me that, I looked into the eyes of my ancestor, and it's as if something transpired in me, and it really, honestly, it changed my life forever from that glimpse of that picture.
Wow. We actually had an interview with someone, and she said that when you start this work, it does change your life if you're passionate about it. So I can totally relate to that. In one of your blog posts, I say case studies because everything is so extensive that you've written, you wrote about discovering the identities of Dr. A.O. Guidry's enslaved people. Many of our listeners encounter challenges when researching their enslaved ancestors. Please share briefly about this post and what are some tips that are effective while searching for enslaved ancestors?
Well, with that one, I was able to locate some information. What I started doing in my research, if I look in a census record and I see somebody having a lot of a personal estate that's very large, what I do, I look at that, I trace that family ties in the courthouse, and that's how I'm able to locate who had slaves on that plantation. And you can kind of look at that as well at the census records with the slave schedules in 1850 and 1860. So that's how you can pretty much see who had what. And then you also, I use the familysearch.org as well as newspaper.org to look at different slave sales that were printed in a newspaper, and that's how I'm able to kind of look and see who had slaves on that plantation. And when I went to the courthouse, I was able to identify that Dr. Guidry had a lot of slaves. And he also had a former slave of his that done a slave narrative that is real popular when it comes to genealogy, because they was doing a project. The government was doing a project trying to get information about how life was for slaves on the plantation. And that's how I was able to pretty much identify that Dr. Guidry had owned a bunch of slaves. And due to the fact that a lot of those slaves were Catholic, I was able to identify their parents when they were getting married in the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I understand that the Catholic Church has some really good records.
Very extensive records on families. And that is exactly why a lot of people, a lot of researchers from Louisiana, we can actually find our ancestry going back to the colonial period due to the upkeeping of the Catholic records.
Right. And so now you said you went to the courthouse for wills. Do you ever find wills online or use one? I know sometimes Ancestry, I've had some success with Ancestry.com with the wills. So do you do both? Do you use Ancestry.com as well? Or you strictly go to courthouses, local courthouses?
Ancestry can be a great reference, but what I've noticed, Ancestry does not have all of the papers that are in some of these wills.
Right.
And sometimes it's always great to go to directly to the source and, you know, go to the courthouse and conduct the research there, due to me actually finding that some of the documentation are not on Ancestry, although they have a file, some of it. A lot of times they don't have everything on there.
So Ancestry would be a good starting point, but you encourage our listeners to definitely visit the local courthouses.
I always visit the local courthouses. That is very imperative as a researcher.
Okay. So I'm sensing that you're very, very passionate and diligent in your research. Describe for us what motivates you to connect with descendants of your ancestors and pursue the names, stories, and descendant connections.
Well, that's where Ancestry come in. What I love about Ancestry in the beginning stages, it's like it was set up to help you organize the things that you need to locate. For example, you'd have the names, then you'll have to find a picture of your ancestor. So what I started to do, I wanted to fill everything that I could with my family. So that's what originally made me start getting the family photos, because of the way Ancestry had to set up. I knew I had to locate photos of those families that appear on the profile. And then it almost became an obsession and challenge to find as many photos to fill those profiles on Ancestry, in which I did. I did a great percentage of locating family photos because of that. So Ancestry definitely gave me that idea and structure to actually locate the family photos, in which I did. And in turn, I actually started to preserve and digitize a lot of those photos that I was finding.
Okay. And listen, we're going to give information regarding your Facebook page at the end, as well as Twitter. And the photos are phenomenal. I was just overwhelmed by looking at them. Very, very powerful. Now, with the photos, just real quick, did you have people donate them to you, or they just came through all of your visits with different family members?
Yes. So what happened with the photos, I'm glad you asked that, because this is very important.
Mm-hmm.
What happened with the photos, at first people were not sharing old photos online. When I first got online, I did not see any old photos online. So what I did, because I was already using MySpace and I was creating collages with just different pictures that I had when I was modeling. So what I did, I started collaging a lot of the family photos, and I was actually tagging the living descendants on Facebook. So that's how I was able to get a lot of my elders on Facebook and on social media, that's to see the research and the old photos that I was actually sharing. So those photos is how I was gaining the attention to the family members. For the first time, a lot of people got a chance to see what their ancestors look like. And one person get another family member tagging in, and then eventually get in touch with each other. And when we got in touch with each other, I was able to go out, scan photos. Then one person, if they don't have a photo of some of the people that I'm asking for, then they get on the phone and call a relative. So it was almost like an obstacle race to find all of those photos.
Okay.
Which I eventually did.
Okay. One moment. So with the photos, people love pictures. You know, if you just have names and dates, that doesn't stand out. But as soon as you add pictures and stories, everything takes on a whole new meaning. So very, very powerful. I'm happy that that worked out for you.
Yes. I mean, I absolutely love it. And the photos, I think that is what I'm most known for, is the photos that I actually have, because I have some amazing photos of my family members from different generations, and they definitely attract a lot of people. That's when people actually saw that, okay, he's taking this very serious when they look at my photo collection. And then to add the records, and then I have the documentation as well as the photos, it made a lot of my family feel more comfortable to share with me as well.
What would you say is the oldest photo that you have? How far that it dates back to?
The oldest photo I have, it'll definitely be of my sixth great grandfather, Martin Donato Bello, who was a free man of color, born in 1756. That has to be one of the oldest photos that I have in my collection.
Okay. That's powerful. Powerful.
And it's just amazing to actually look at an ancestor that lived during the colonial period, as well as have all the documentation of them, and to go back and see that lovely photo just hanging on a wall, I can just only imagine the things that he actually saw during his time period being of great influence. I mean, if it wasn't for that particular ancestor, a lot of what went on in the Opelousas area of Southwest Louisiana, those families would have never got the resources to be the families that they were and today.
Now, I saw one picture with two little kids holding a photo of one of your ancestors. Do you find that the children are very interested that come, say, to the reunions or the events that you have?
The children are very inquisitive. In fact, they are the ones that ask the most questions when they look at the photos. And that's what it's all about, to get the younger generation to get involved, and those photos do it. When they look at those photos, just the way that I had the impression that it gave me, it's doing the same to the younger generation, and they become very curious and they ask about those people.
Okay.
And speaking of the younger generation, Alex, we understand that you conducted research on Jay-Z. So what was it that led you to research his family history? And that was actually the post that you did that caught my attention, was your Jay-Z post. You mentioned that he also had Louisiana connection, just like Beyonce. So what was it that made you want to research him?
So what happened is, and this is what I tell a lot of people, I don't randomly look at celebrities. It just so happened that I was looking up some information on a relative that moved to a different area. And I noticed she didn't have any information on the death certificate. So I know that whoever was the informant, they didn't know any information beyond her. However, in my database, from the research that I've conducted, I was able to substantiate that she came from one of the Native American tribes in the area. And what I do with all my research, I try to find some of the living descendants so I could connect with them. And it just so happened that when I saw Jay-Z's, like when I searched for Jay-Z's grandfather to try to find some of the living descendants, I was like, wait a minute. That name sounds awfully familiar. And the fact that he was a preacher in my city coming from Louisiana, and I noticed that this person went to New York. And when I saw that this person moved to New York, I was like, wait a minute, this is not no coincidence. And Agnes Reeves, that is not a common name at all. So to make sure that I was not just going to put some information out there, I went back to some of my relatives and they say, well, yeah, but that's something that the elders don't like to mention due to the estranged relationship that they had with Jay-Z's father and grandfather due to some of the things that Jay-Z mentioned in the lyrics.
Mm.
So, however, the families were able to confirm that information. And because Agnes' family, a lot of them, he actually wanted a lot of his family to move to New York. But one thing about a lot of families from Louisiana, once they get a taste of the country life, they feel comfortable enough to live like that forever. So they was kind of afraid to go to a big city like New York. So as a result, they didn't go. But some of them did go to California, and that's where a lot of Jay-Z's close relatives are living at right now, as well as the little Louisiana community.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, that was a nice surprise to find out that he had some Louisiana background, because I never knew that.
Right. And what I love the most about that, the fact that historically, looking at music-wise, by him doing that music video with Bun B, that actually is what kind of got the East Coast rappers to become more comfortable working with the Southern rappers. However, those two people, Jay-Z and Bun B, you know, UGK, they had no idea that their great-great-grandparents were close with siblings. They had no idea. So from that, I started to look at pictures of Jay-Z. Then I started to see other rappers they was in cahoots with. And I'm like, wait a minute. Not all of these rappers that didn't work with each other are actually relatives. They all come from the Louisiana area, the same Louisiana parish.
Now, does he know anything about your research?
Oh, I'm pretty sure at this point he does, because I have a lot of Beyonce's close relatives that are following my research. So they just haven't said anything right now. And, you know, which doesn't surprise me, because I know he likes to control his narrative. And now you actually have somebody that got some records to show that, you know, he is the mogul now, but I got records to show that his ancestors were just as resourceful as he is today.
Mm.
So although, you know, he had humble beginnings in Louisiana, I mean, in New York, he literally come from some very affluent family from Louisiana who had property and were well established during the antebellum period.
Ooh, that's amazing. That is amazing.
So it was mentioned that you had a major genealogy presentation on Sunday. Please share with us what took place.
What happened, it was a Creole festival at the Vermilionville Center in Lafayette, Louisiana. And this is something that I sort of do annually. Now they invite me annually. And it's basically, I share some of the work that I've done as a museum kind of platform. And people can approach me. And a lot of times when they do have families from the area, I can literally connect those families and tell them different stories about the families. And they actually had one of the news captured. They had two people. They had one of the professors with the communication at UL. He captured what happened with those two children that was holding that photo, how I was able to connect them from the photos on the wall.
That's really, really cool. Wow. Now, and in reading some of your posts, we took note that you do very methodical research. And one post, the importance of finding sources, you noted how important it is to have documentation for your findings so that your research can always be validated. Can you share what your experience was in learning this from researcher Christoph Landry?
Or Dr. Merlene Petrie, I think it is, or Pete.
Mm-hmm. Right. Both Dr. Christoph Landry as well as Merlene Petrie. They were very vital in how I was able to structure my research more. Because before I met Merlene Petrie, I was always taught, although a lot of the research, me looking at the census, I was able to logically piece things together. However, they did not, due to the fact that I had people like, you know, Dr. Christoph Landry, Rodney Sam, who were phenomenal researchers, you had to have documentation to prove the claim. Like, although logically I was putting everything together that DNA is now showing, right, it still was not enough to make them feel as if, okay, hey, you got to find a document to prove that. And that's one of the reasons why I was real extensive and want to go into the courthouses to try to find a documentation. And through Dr. Merlene Petrie, who is also a relative, she taught me to organize my research and always be detailed, as well as Mr. Keith Fontenot, who was the archivist at St. Landry Parish, always taught me to take footnotes and make note of every document that I get, because those will always turn, basically it'd be most of your book if you do want to do a genealogy book. Those footnotes are going to help you. So now if something was to happen to me, I have some meticulous notes written on every document that I have in my database, or why it's even important, or why do I have it.
Mm-hmm. That's really good advice.
And we've had Rodney Sam on before as well.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, me and Rodney shared a lot of common ancestors.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah, he has some really like amazing posts and research that he does on Louisiana Creole culture and history. Also, are you familiar with, I think his name is J.K. Simeon. He's a, he does a lot of antiques and
yeah, art. Jeremy Simeon. Yeah, that's another brother. Jeremy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Cool. Oh, nice. So it's like all one big happy family.
Right. Yeah. I say that all the time. I'm very fortunate to be amongst a great group of people that are doing things in the history world.
That's a blessing.
Do you think that you'll publish a book of your work?
Oh, I have. Look, let me make you laugh about that. I guarantee I probably have more unpublished books than an average university at this point. Like, when I tell people this, they think I'm joking, but I literally have thousands of Word documents that are uncompleted from work that I have done within the course of 15 years. And some of those documents are like 500 pages long.
Wow.
So I have a long way. I'm going to be publishing for a while. It's like, I'll stop. And then with DNA, with the revolution of DNA, it's like, wait a minute. Let me go fact check all of the stuff, because even though I have the documentation, DNA is like, hey, wrong one. So now I have to go back. And now, because my name is on it, it's like, look, I am terrified of wanting to publish things that DNA is kind of making us question at this point. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can understand that. It can be a confirmatory tool, or it's a tool that like shakes everything you thought you knew.
Right. So far I'm realizing that a lot of my ancestors were at least telling the truth.
Oh, that's nice. Good. That's any really that good. Any that weren't?
Well, actually, and then this is interesting as well. Like, I always check, because I inherited my great-grandmother's photo album. And in that photo album, I was looking at the back of the names, because she used to do a lot of house sitting, and she worked for like a lot of prominent people around the Lafayette area, like cleaning the houses and just babysitting. And it turns out my DNA, the person who we thought was my grandmother's father, was not. And mm-hmm. Now I'm matching with some people that are from a different country, very close. So now that I'm looking at those photos, in the back of those photos, I'm actually matching some of the people that she was working for.
Wow.
So that's going to be like a little, and it's just amazing that now that I'm going back over my grandmother's belongings, I'm seeing letters that she wrote. I'm seeing like a lot of, and basically I see a whole life I have now in a plastic bag. Like, I even have bills, light bills from like the 30s and 40s.
Nice.
And everything. So I kind of see a lot of the things that she was doing. And mm-hmm. also how, you know, she was basically paying for one item three times that amount because of the interest. But I just thought it's amazing to have everything that my grandmother had that she kept as her prized possession. I now have that. And now they are giving me a lot of basically a confirmation of things that I'm searching for now today.
Amazing.
Anybody else in your family doing the research with you, or are you doing all of this on your own?
Well, I guess you could say it always, you know, you start to research with everybody. Like, I always started by myself, and then I eventually meet another researcher. But everybody tends to do their own things, do it their own little way. And now that I have so many irons in the fire with my research, I tend to do a lot of research by myself. However, I do have a research crew, and they are phenomenal. Like, they are able to help me. Like, whenever I have some things that I need to find and I want to stay focused on something, I just give them that. And before you know it, they find everything that I need to know about that particular person, especially when I'm trying to figure out why this family is matching this person using DNA. They're able to go locate the living descendants and find basically their family trees.
Hmm. That's amazing. That's awesome. It's actually, I think you're the first person that we have interviewed who has a research team. That sounds pretty, pretty official.
You know what? You're right.
And I challenge them. The challenge is, if I'm going live, for example, if I'm going live and I'm finding a courthouse, a record, what we do live to show people that we actually know how to locate the living descendants after we find any slave records, we have 10 minutes to actually locate the living descendants of the slaves that we found, and we have been doing that pretty good.
Excellent. Oh, wow. Congratulations. Congratulations with that. So, Alex, what are some parting words of inspiration and tips, just a few tips, that you would like to share with our listeners?
When you start, never give up. Always find documentation to prove your claim. And always make notes. Take notes. Notate everything, because some things that you've done 5 years ago, you may forget once you start to get real deep into your research, and then you'll end up buying some of the same records if you don't take notes.
That's right. Well, thank you for that. The note-taking is very important. It definitely saves time and energy and resources.
Yes.
And frustration.
And frustration. Absolutely.
I agree. I definitely agree. But I love it. Nonetheless, I got bit by the genealogy bug, and I don't want to get healed.
Aww. I like that. Okay.
That sounds like Donna Summer. If there's a cure for this, I don't need it. I don't want it.
Oh, Diana Ross. Yeah.
Right. Donna, I thought it was Donna Summers.
No, that's Diana.
Oh, it was
Ross.
Diana Ross. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry. Sherrod is like, no, that's wrong artist. Thank you.
But I like that. Yes. To be bit by the genealogy bug is a great thing.
Right.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us on Speak On It. You can
Thank you.
And you can contact and learn more about Alex at bmtalex409@gmail.com. He's also on Facebook, alexgenealogy@facebook.com, or Alex Genealogy, or Creole Alex on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. Thank you.